So usually when we go to a teaching with some experienced teacher, you know, like these wonderful teachers that we get to go see, then we begin by making an offering. So we make an offering of everything in the universe, offering a mandala. So we'll do that to start with, okay? Oh, this ground scented with perfume and covered with flowers, adorned by Mount Meru, four worlds, sun and moon, I imagine as a Buddha land, and then offer it. May all beings enjoy this pure land. I send forth this jewel mandala to you, my precious Guru. Then the thing that sets us apart from any other practitioner is our refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Buddha, the historical Buddha, in his teachings and in the community of spiritual practitioners, our friends on the path. So we think about taking refuge and imagine how wonderful it is that we have actually met a path that promises to free us from suffering. Wow. So have that sense of gratitude as we recite the refuge prayer three times, thinking not just of the external refuge, but also taking refuge in the mind of enlightenment, in seeing reality as it is, and in those beings who have. But as Lama Yeshe always used to say, ultimate refuge is taking refuge with confidence that the nature of our own mind is wisdom. Its expression is clarity, and its compassion is all-pervasive. So we really think, wow, okay, I too can become a Buddha as we take refuge. I go for refuge until enlightenment to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. By my virtuous actions of giving and so on, may I become a Buddha to benefit all beings. I go for refuge until enlightenment to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. By my virtuous actions of giving and so on, may I become a Buddha to benefit all beings. I go for refuge until enlightenment to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. By my virtuous actions of giving and so on, may I become a Buddha to benefit all beings. So we make this prayer. May all beings have equanimity, free of attachment and aversion. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings find good rebirth and the bliss of liberation. And we request blessings. May we be inspired by guru devotion, uplifted by the preciousness of this human life, shed the fetters of attachment and aversion through a knowledge of impermanence, be protected by refuge, guided by a knowledge of actions and their results, aim for liberation through renunciation. May we be motivated by bodhicitta, opened by giving, disciplined by ethical behavior, strengthened by patience, enthused by joyous effort, stabilized by concentration, and free by wisdom. So imagine then that this prayer is received. And as a result, just experience blessings coming in the form of light entering through your crown and coming down to your heart center. And filling you up. Now in a posture of meditation with your back straight. Settle your body in its natural state, imbued with the qualities of relaxation, stillness, and vigilance. Thinking that just as I long for happiness, so too does every other living being. All of us, since time without discoverable beginning, being born into samsara, having to experience all the many sufferings that samsara has to offer. But now we have something special, this precious human life, which is difficult to receive, quite easily lost, and once obtained, most beneficial. And if we don't use it to seek perfect enlightenment, we shall have to experience all the many sufferings again and again and again. The power to protect us from suffering lies in the Guru and the teachings of the Buddha. So think now, I have this time, unbelievable. I'm going to gather all my powers of concentration, letting go of the past, not fantasizing about the future, but I'm going to remain here, present, in each precious moment. In a state of awareness, in order that I might attain a state of enlightenment to liberate every living being without exception. Let that be our motivation for this evening's practice. And to fully relax your body, allow your awareness to come to your crown. And then float down through your body, past your eyes, your jaw, releasing and relaxing the back of your neck, Take your awareness down your arms, all the way to the tips of your fingers. Then float down your torso. To the small of your back, to your sit bones, your belly soft to receive the full breath. Float down your legs, past your knees, to the soles of your feet and the tips of your toes. Fully embodied and fully relaxed. Attend to the sensation of the breath within the body. The rising and falling. Moment by moment. Fine-tune your awareness by bringing it to a single point at the tip of your nose, attending to the sensation. As you breathe out and back in again, that is a full cycle. Out and back in. Counting 10 cycles, paying attention particularly to the end of the out-breath, because the mind wants to escape. It thinks it's finished. So you watch that sensation right there, all the way to the end of the out-breath, and let the body breathe in on its own. Watch it like it's amazing. Be satisfied if 10% of your awareness is on your breath, while the other 90% is watching what else is happening in your mind. But try to hold on to that 10% and be satisfied with that, right there, at the tip of the nose. If you lose the object, just return. And know when you are breathing out and when you are breathing in. There's nothing to do, nothing to undo, just attending to the breath. There is peace in the not doing. Like training a puppy, just bring the mind back to the breath. With kindness, non-judgmental. Let sounds point you right back to the breath. Just notice when you wish you were doing something else. How many of you had moments of wishing to be doing something else? Actually, I find it quite peaceful to sit. And going through there are the cycles that we go through when we sit. So we push through the point where we're done. And we go beyond that. We let go of that too. You know, you let go of that too. And if you can come to a place of being at peace with what you're doing, peace with the breath, there is an ability to let go in the busy world as well. When you train yourself to let go on the cushion, and then when you're out there in the busy world, and you find yourself captivated by some thought, an unhelpful emotion, you can come right back to that peace that you have experienced in the breath or in awareness, whatever your meditation is. Turn the mind to that. And you begin to see in time how we are not our thoughts. They arise, they abide, they pass away. The point of meditation is to become familiar with our mind so that we have the ability to train it, to cultivate virtuous states of mind, happy states of mind. Yes?
Become familiar with what?
The mind.
The mind.
The mind.
Didn't quite hear you. You've got competition.
I know. Isn't it wonderful? Yeah. So it's not just training our mind to be peaceful and calm and enjoy, you know. It's actually training our mind so that what is arising in our mind is virtue. And the only way to do that is to imbue it with virtue. It's to turn around, to transform. They say the entire path to enlightenment is purification and accumulation. You purify the negativity and you accumulate the positive. And when you see your mind, and you see what it is, you see that all of this is just like a movie. It's our own movie, right? We're the producer, we're the director, and we play the leading role. And for us to have a practice where we meditate, we bring our mind to a state of peace to begin to try to look at that. What is that? What is that? We bring ourselves to that state, and then we use that state of mind to analyze this life. What is this life? The first thing we have to do is find a teacher, right? This we talked about. So you find a teacher who knows more than you do, who thinks more about future lives than this one, and who thinks more about others than themselves. Those are the three minimum qualities of a teacher, to find someone like that. And really, in this country, amazing. You know, we are so lucky, because in California, Lama Yeshe used to call Santa Cruz the spiritual supermarket. And I think this is true throughout the larger cities in California. No matter where you are, every single day you can go to a Dharma event. Multiple times during the day you can do that. You know. So the point is to actually find your path, get on it, and stay on it. Just follow it and do the meditations. Try to understand the path. Study and read. I find super helpful, really useful in my life, has been to have a Dharma book. A Lam Rim book particularly is one that I have done many times. But I also very much like Westerners who are writing now, who have become quite realized, and I enjoy seeing how their words, how they're expressing it. Because back in the 70s, there were very few translated Dharma books. Now, unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. It's helpful to have a foundation, to have the same foundation. So for instance, this is the Gelugpa tradition of the four schools of Tibetan Buddhism. This is the same school as His Holiness the Dalai Lama. So when you begin to study the Gelugpa tradition, you know, you get on that bus, and that will take you to enlightenment. You get on the Kagyu bus, that will take you to enlightenment. The Nyingma, yes. And the Sakya, yes. They all go to enlightenment. The difference is the terminology sometimes different. You know? So you go to a teaching, you've been studying, you know, maybe you've been studying for a year, and then you hear this lama's coming and you go to hear this lama teach. And you don't connect the dots because you don't know the words that they're using for the same thing that you've been studying. It's very interesting, and this happens over your lifetime. You will see that if you go to different teachings. So it's useful to study a tradition and stay within that tradition, but it's okay in the beginning to go to the different supermarkets and determine which one do you resonate with, you know, and look around, who's in the room, you know, are these people that you want to hang out with? They say, be careful who your teacher is, who you pick for your teacher, because you will surely become like them. So sometimes I find myself making facial expressions like Lama used to do, or saying things that Rinpoche, Lama Zopa Rinpoche says. It just happens. You can't help it, you know, because you're saturating yourself with that kind of teaching. So you become like that. So it's excellent you find a teacher, right? And then in the beginning, we've gone through this. We start with the three levels of motivation. First, we're motivated by wanting to have happiness in future lives. So it's a given when you begin to study Buddhism that there's past and future lives. I mean, you have to at least be open to that. Just at least open to the possibility. And there is a meditation that you can do, which you simply sit and you go back to this morning. What did I have for breakfast? And yesterday, what did I do? Then, you know, last week. You keep going back. Of course, we can't really remember. But we can go back to certain points of time in our life. And we can go back to when we were in college, and when we were in high school, and when we were in grade school. And there will be things that pop out in those different periods of time in our life. And we can go all the way back to as far back as we can remember. And because we can do that, then we can imagine going back all the way to the womb. And then if we can imagine that, going all the way back to before that, you know, what kind of a life did I have, you know, as an old person in a previous life? And take yourself back and back and back in an imaginary way. We have done that in this class in the past. When you do that, you think about who are you now and what are the things that you like and what are you drawn to? You know, are you mechanically inclined? No one ever taught you how to take a motor apart, but you just can do it. You know, are you musically inclined? You know, maybe you were a concert pianist. You know, you think about and just go back and back the things that pop for you. So it gives you kind of an idea, and then you come on back to the present, and then take yourself forward in the future. Take yourself all the way out there to the end of this life. And think about the state of your mind in this life. So, what can I expect? Where will I go next? Thinking like that is really helpful to open your mind to the possibility. We can't say it's proven, or that you are, that you have had previous lives, or you will have a future life. We can't say it's proven. But we can't say it's not proven either. You know? So we can get into debates with people who have different ideas. but it's really not useful, because we can't come to any definitive conclusion. So it's interesting to talk about. But so we think, when we begin our initial motivation, usually people come to a Dharma class or to a spiritual class because they think there's more than just what's in this life. They certainly hope there's more than what we have to experience. Or they've been through some suffering, a period of suffering. that is trying to understand what that is. Or they've had some epiphany, trying to put a label on it. What is that? So people are seeking answers, and they come to a class. So the very first thing we do is we take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha with an attitude of cultivating a life that will lead to a happy future life. And what are the causes of happiness? Say it out loud.
Making others happy.
Making others happy, yes, that's true. Yeah, that's true. So the definition of a virtuous activity is one that produces happiness. That's the definition in Buddhist terminology. So that would be thinking in terms of making others happy, non-harming, living a life, an ethical life that helps rather than harms, is creating the cause for a happy future life. And then purifying those mistakes that we have created. So we think about, so this would be taking refuge and living a morally disciplined life. And in order to do that, in order not to just grab all the gusto, you know, to have the most fun in this life, we have to think about future lives. We have to think about the fact that we have actually in this life something very precious, which is a human life. We did the meditation last week on being what it's like to have a precious human life. So we can imagine living in Syria right now. Could you practice Dharma? You know, doesn't it break your heart? We can imagine not having any access to any spiritual practice. We can imagine starving. When we have a headache, it's hard to practice, right? If you have a stomach ache, you know, all you want to do is lie in bed and moan. So when we have a healthy, intelligent, all our needs met, we have leisure. You know, we say, oh, you know, I'm so busy. So busy, I have to do this and this and this and this. My life is really busy and I've got to, you know, I got this and I've got this list and I've made my list. I got up this morning, I've got this, and then there's this and this and this. And so I really, you know, it's hard to find time. But we make choices how we're going to spend our time. And we can carve out the time to practice, to sit and to study. And we have to make it a priority in our life. And the only way to make it a priority in our life is not to think that we're going to have time or we're going to get another precious human. So the scripture talks about how rare it is to get what we have. They say it's as rare as a blind sea turtle putting his neck through a circle, a golden ring floating randomly on the surface, and this turtle only comes up, he's blind, and he only comes up once every 100 years. That's how rare it is to have a life that has met the Dharma, that has an interest in it, and that practices. You see? That's so rare. Unbelievably rare. And the rewards are also unbelievable. The rewards are fantastic. Because as a byproduct of practicing, you get happy. You know? You do. Because when you practice living an ethical life and you practice benefiting others and you practice understanding the nature of your mind and you practice cultivating compassion, loving kindness, if you think about those states of mind, those are beautiful states of mind. You know, when you feel compassionate and kind, your heart is open and it's a wonderful feeling, is it not? When you're feeling generous and not tight, it makes you happy. So you feel happy. And that's what Buddhism promises, immutable happiness. It doesn't promise, you know, ecstasy, but it promises immutable happiness. That's pretty good. So we do think about this precious human life, right? And we think about how we're going to lose it. And you can't just think about it, think, oh yeah, I've got this precious human life and I am going to die. We have to wake ourselves up by really thinking about that. Thinking about what it means. What it means that we are going to die. Because is there anybody in this room that believes that they will die tomorrow? No. We don't. We make our plans. And we don't believe. We have an idea that we're going to die. But dying happens to other people. Right? I remember when my daughter was in preschool. I was in my very early 30s. And there was a father. It was one of those preschools where the parents went and helped, right? You had to show up and work one day a week. And I got to know the other parents. And one of them was a man who was in his mid-40s and had a little 2.5, 3-year-old. And he had a heart attack and died. And at the time, I thought, you know, well, he had lived, you know, he was late 40s. And I look at that now and I think, wow, you know, I did actually think that at the time, that was kind of he was kind of an older man.
Late 40s?
Exactly.
Hey, I had a baby at 47.
Yeah. Well, when you're 70 and you look back on 40,
yeah, it's different.
It's very different. It's very, very different. And yet, what happens as you age, even though your energy diminishes, the mind is still vibrant and you know, still thinks that there's plenty of time. Plenty of time. I'm going to do that thing tomorrow, or I'm going to do that next week. As soon as I finish with this particular part of my work, I'm going to take less time. I'm going to work less. And I'm going to do more. I'm going to have more time for myself. And then you have more time for yourself. And what do you do with it? You see? Because practicing Dharma is not always fun. Right? And we're always looking for fun. So that's why having this, meditating on this precious human life, meditating on impermanence, is a motivating factor for us to say, okay, as His Holiness the Dalai Lama says, you know, thinking about death is really like a good friend who's on your shoulder saying, watching you, saying, be careful, you know, be careful, do the right thing. Don't waste this time. If we can think like that, then it doesn't mean that we shouldn't enjoy our life. This is the mistake, if you think now you shouldn't enjoy your life. Because it's more a matter of turning on awareness all the time. So that even when you're out enjoying with your friends, you have a party at your home, you're enjoying with your children, your husband, your partner, your friends, you're aware. That's practicing Dharma too. It doesn't have to be on your cushion. You're singing, you know, make the offering to all the Buddhas. Everything you do can be imbued with Dharma practice. When you eat, you offer your food before you eat. Then every bite is a Dharma activity. You can imbue things in your life with Dharma. So Lama Zopa Rinpoche last summer in North Carolina, he led a 3-week retreat. And his theme was bodhicitta mindfulness. So he wanted people to practice all the time, right? So he had the organizers put signs up all over the place. So you went into the bathroom, you know, you turned the water on, you know, you're offering water to all sentient beings. You open the door, you're opening the door to liberation for all sentient beings. Closing the door on samsara. Always thinking about how you can help. You walk up the hill, you're taking all the beings out of the hell realms. There are many ways to imbue your day with thoughts of enlightenment. So that could be a good exercise to make a list. Particularly if there's some place you go every day. You walk out your back door to get in your car. You can put a little sign there just to draw your attention to it. You wake up in the morning and you think, wow, another day to practice Dharma. Fantastic. This is the way, it's all day. Dharma isn't just sitting and practicing breath meditation. It's transforming your mind. When you're irritated at the checkout stand because the person is learning, you know, and you've already moved to 3 different lines because you're in a hurry. You just take a breath and go, okay, I might die. What kind of state of mind do I want to have right now? And you watch how your mind shifts, how irritation is there and you're holding on to it. But as soon as you take a breath and you let it go, you go, oh yeah, I'm not irritation. I'm this vast, luminous, clear awareness. Good. Now, may you be happy, this person in front of me, you know, who can't get their money out of their wallet. He's counting all the pennies. There are many things, many ways in our day that we can use to practice, and it's so useful. It's so useful. So then the middle motivation, the middle scope, is saying, I don't want to just have a good future life. I want to be completely free from samsara altogether. So what is samsara? Who knows the definition of samsara?
The cycle of birth.
Cycling through birth, aging, sickness, and death without choice, under the control of karma and mental afflictions. So it's without choice. This is the key. Because Buddhas come back by choice into, but they're not in samsara. They're not under the control of karma and delusions like we are. Blown. So nirvana means to be free. Free from those mental afflictions. When you have a moment of clarity, peace, you know, just that in between the barrage that's going, when you have that and there's no anger, there's no desire, there's no doubt, there's no jealousy, no pride. It's just total, complete peace. So then what is reflected in front of you doesn't have to cause that those negative emotions to arise. Those come because we've entertained them in the past. They're not part of your mind. They're seeds that you've planted, but they don't, and they ripen when conditions are presented, but they're not, they're like clouds. They're not part of your mind. So that's interesting, because we can be free of them. And I think I've listened to you guys talk, and you've mentioned how you've seen how your mind has changed, yeah? When you practice. You see how maybe you don't get quite as irritated, or you don't have so much grasping. It's to rejoice in that, because when we rejoice in our practice, it makes us practice more. Yeah? So this is freedom from samsara altogether means that we are going to, on the base of living an ethical life, still, we're living an ethical life, we're going to develop concentration and we're going to understand how reality exists. We're going to understand, first intellectually, we understand that word emptiness, how everything lacks inherent existence. And then we have the direct experience of that. We know for sure that we don't exist in the way that we think that we do. And that requires concentration. It requires meditation. So this is beyond just living an ethical life for positive future lives. We're saying, nope, we want to get out of here altogether. And that's that. We have to get serious. If we want to be free, we have to be serious about our practice. We have to practice. Yeah, it's true. So then we study karma and suffering. Karma, like what is karma? Now, I know Heather's teaching a class on karma on Wednesday nights, so if you can go, we're not going to go in depth on karma in this class. So if you can study. Karma is a very deep subject, right? They say that only a Buddha can fully understand karma. But it is like that. You know, what goes round comes round. I wanted to ask if there were any questions before we take a little break, a little tea break. Okay, so I'm going to try to be really clean, clear, and not go over. So let's just take a little 10-minute break. Have a cup of tea, and we'll come back and do a little meditation.
Can I do a couple of announcements?
Sure.